If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Silicon Valley Bank finds a buyer. Plus, mass demonstrations in Israel against Benjamin Netanyahu's judicial overhaul.
The country is most likely to be put on pause today, with a vast part of the population planning to join in protests.
And why regional banks are rolling out a welcome mat for crypto clients. It's Monday, March 27th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. And we begin today with an overnight development in the banking crisis. One of America's largest regional lenders, First Citizens Bank, is buying big pieces of Silicon Valley Bank. That comes more than 2 weeks after SVB's collapse sent tremors through the global banking system. And joining me now with the latest on this story is Wall Street Journal editor Matthew Thomas. Matthew, tell us, what exactly is First Citizens buying here? Walk us through the basics of this.
Okay, so First Citizens is not buying the entire bank. I guess that's the important point to make. They are taking all of the deposits. So anyone that has an account or previously had an account with Silicon Valley Bank is now becoming a depositor of First Citizens Bank. They are not acquiring all of the assets, though. They're taking all of the loans, but there's about $90 billion of securities and other assets that are being left with the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And if you look back, if we remember 2 weeks ago about the problems Silicon Valley faced, it was the losses on those assets, on its securities, many of which were very safe assets, by the way. We're talking US treasuries, but it was the losses on those assets that caused a lot of these problems. So First Citizens Bank is taking the kind of fundamental parts of what you expect a bank to hold. It's taking the deposits and it's also taking the loans. So it doesn't have worries necessarily about Silicon Valley's loan book, but it's not taking that huge portfolio of treasuries, which makes sense because this is a bank that at the end of last year had about $109 billion of assets. That's First Citizens Bank. It's taking on $119 billion of additional deposits. So this is already a massive growth of the bank. There is absolutely no need from First Citizens' point of view to saddle it with $90 billion of treasuries and other securities. That wouldn't make sense.
What is the broader significance of this, Matthew? Does it send a message to the markets?
This is very important. I would caution that we don't overstate the importance too much. If you look back a week ago, we had a similar situation with Credit Suisse in Europe. There was a deal from a bigger bank that, just like First Citizens here, had a loss share agreement with the government and took over Credit Suisse. Immediately, suspicions turned to Deutsche Bank. In my view, kind of unnecessarily, Deutsche Bank is a much stronger institution than Credit Suisse was. But the bailout of Credit Suisse did not end questions about the European banking system. This acquisition is unlikely, similarly, to end questions about the US banking system, but it's a massive step towards a wider solution.
Finally, Matthew, you mentioned the loss share agreement that is in this deal. Explain that for us. Does that hint that there is still a potential risk here for First Citizens about the pieces of SVB they're taking on?
So yes, there are risks. They are taking on a significant loan book. They're taking on $119 billion of liabilities. That's for deposits. But it makes sense that the government would incentivize them to go ahead with this deal. The loss share agreement shouldn't make us necessarily think that they feel they're buying dud assets. We know we're in the middle of an uncertain period for banks right now. So First Citizens Bank, however much confidence they have in the individual assets, is going to want to make sure that if the situation in the banking system deteriorates, they are not left holding the bag. So this just gives them a bit of safety in case things get worse, or at least they don't get better anytime soon.
That was Wall Street Journal Markets editor Matthew Thomas. Matthew, thank you so much for breaking this down.
Thanks a lot.
Ukrainian officials have called for an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council after Russian President Vladimir Putin announced plans to deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Ukraine's foreign ministry said that moving the weapons to Belarus would undermine nuclear non-proliferation treaties and is demanding that the permanent members of the Security Council intervene. Putin said on Saturday that Russia would finish building a storage facility for its tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus by July. A spokesman for the White House said the administration is closely monitoring the issue, but so far has not seen evidence that Putin had moved nuclear weapons or planned to use them in Ukraine. The president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, hasn't publicly commented on the announcement. Israel is at a standstill today amid strikes and mass protests. Pressure is mounting against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's planned judicial overhaul, which would let a simple parliamentary majority override the Supreme Court. Journal correspondent Dov Lieber in Tel Aviv says that tensions escalated Sunday when Netanyahu fired his defense minister, who'd warned the judicial overhaul should be delayed.
Within an hour or so, something that is probably unprecedented in the country's history, hundreds of thousands of people flooded into the streets of Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa, across the country, blocking main highways and roads in protest against the firing of the defense minister, who had just warned the day before that advancing the legislation is a national security threat. And that is where we are today. All of Israel is waiting in bated breath to hear what Mr. Netanyahu will decide after these protests. Will he pause legislation, or will he, like his far-right religious allies, continue to press on with it?
Leaders of Israel's powerful tech industry have warned that Netanyahu's judicial overhaul could scare investment and talent away from the country. Netanyahu, meanwhile, risks losing his political majority as calls mount within the governing coalition and the opposition for him to cancel the judicial reform. And Twitter CEO Elon Musk says that employees will receive stock awards based on a roughly $20 billion valuation for the company. Musk said in an email viewed by the Wall Street Journal that he was optimistic about the company's future and could see a path to a more than $250 billion valuation. However, Twitter's current valuation reveals it is less than half as valuable now compared to the $44 billion price that Musk paid to acquire it last year. Since then, many big advertisers have stopped spending on the platform, and the company said in court filings last week that some of its proprietary source code had been leaked online. That incident could raise security concerns about the company. It couldn't be immediately learned which parts of the code were leaked or how long they were available. Coming up, can crypto companies access the banking services that they need to survive? Just a few weeks ago, they feared the worst, but now crypto execs say that some banks are giving them a warm reception. We'll have that story after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The recent meltdowns of Signature Bank and Silvergate Capital dealt a blow to cryptocurrency firms who'd previously relied on those banks. But a number of small community banks like Cross River Bank and regional lenders like Western Alliance Bank Corp are now rolling out a welcome mat to new crypto clients. So with the banking sector finally opening up to crypto, what does that tell us about the industry following recent banking turmoil? And here to answer that and more is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, of all the times to be doing this, why are mid-sized banks now taking on board crypto clients? I mean, just a few months ago, the crypto industry looked to be on pretty rocky ground.
I mean, I think part of the appeal is that if you have clients who need a home, you know, it's potentially a way to make money. So if you're a small regional bank, you're really just doing kind of local community lending. You're not really going to grow from an influx of deposits from mom and pop shops and everyday people. And so part of them are eyeing this as an opportunity to grow their deposit base and get some additional big companies in who need somewhere to bank. And then I think part of it is just if you have companies that need services, they might pay slightly more than you can charge someone who can literally go anywhere. Because a lot of banks, while some of them are thinking we can offer services to crypto firms, a lot of them are still very shy about it, in part because the government crackdown on a lot of crypto companies has left a lot of banks feeling like, you know, maybe this isn't the safest industry that I could lend to or let open an account. And so I think a lot of firms do have hesitation, which is why for the ones that are happy to take on new clientele, maybe it's an opportunity to make a little bit more money. Maybe it's an opportunity to grow their companies with an industry that does need a home.
Right. Okay. So amid a sort of a flight of some depositors, here you have a bunch of eager clients, right? So why not target them? But I mean, isn't there some risk in this strategy too? Crypto is an unregulated market. Might taking on these clients not pose some longer-term risk for banks, even if they need depositors now?
I mean, yeah, and that's certainly why a lot of, especially the established players in banking, and why a lot of regional banks, even so, aren't letting crypto companies bank. We've heard that even in the course of the ones who are open to it, they're being very, very careful with making sure that these companies do correct compliance, that they do correct money laundering controls. And so even for the ones who are willing to take on these clients, they're doing so very cautiously, I think because they acknowledge that there's a lot of risk here as well.
Caitlin, amid the banking turmoil of the last few weeks, what's been the action in the crypto world? Some big crypto assets are up. Does that suggest investors maybe see crypto as a safe haven asset amid some of this turmoil?
It's a little bit hard to suss out. Part of it is that I think crypto just tends to trade alongside risk assets. And so sometimes people just buy Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies when they think that interest rates are going to fall, as a lot of the expectation is at the moment with the recent banking turmoil that the Fed will cut interest rates. And so that could be one side of it driving the rally in Bitcoin. And then part of it could just be that, you know, maybe some people do look at this as kind of a safe thing to hold that's not dependent on any one bank to buy or sell. But I think the jury is still very much out. I mean, Bitcoin trading is a fraction of global currency trading, and so it's very volatile. You kind of have to take the price rises and falls with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Finally, Caitlin, going forward, can these mid-sized banks that are, you know, making outreach to the crypto world now actually offer those crypto clients all the services they need, the services they maybe used to rely on from Signature and Silvergate?
Some of them, yes, and some of them are developing that further out. And then there's another appealing part of the banking infrastructure that Silvergate and Signature had, which was like these messaging networks. So not quite SWIFT, but if two crypto companies that had an account at that bank needed to send money quickly, they had this internal messaging system that allowed them to do that. That technology is not wholly original, and so the expectation is that a lot of these new banks that are bringing on crypto clients will start to build out that infrastructure. And so it seems like they will be able to meet those needs. It's just a question of how many of these crypto firms are going to be getting bank accounts, whether there's going to be new concentration risk. It still is, we're hearing, a very arduous process for crypto firms to get bank accounts. They're able to bank somewhere is generally what we're hearing, but it's much more difficult than it would have been 6 or 8 months ago.
Well, all this seems like pretty good news then for crypto firms. They may not have all the services immediately at their fingertips that they had at Signature and Silvergate, but they're still going to be able to mostly get the job done.
It seems likely that at minimum, crypto companies will find ways to work with select companies or ways to work around that. They're not wholly without options, but it's just more difficult than it used to be.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
And finally, filters on social media are getting even more advanced, but not everyone is on board with their new look. One recent TikTok effect called Bold Glamour creates a face-contoured, lip-plumped version of you, and it's made some users feel uncomfortable with just how realistic it looks.
You guys, this is a problem. Look, you can't even tell it's a filter anymore.
This filter is terrifying, like dystopian-level terrifying.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Ashley O'Brien explains why the filter has caused such a backlash.
There's been a lot of people that are saying that this is something that could potentially be really problematic for people's self-esteem. There's definitely been a push for people saying, you know, this should be banned. They're worried about people that are teenagers that are trying this out and maybe don't know the effect that it could have on their mental health. I spoke with Jennifer Mills, a psychology professor at York University in Toronto. She basically said that bold glamour could ultimately have a contrast effect on people, which is that when they look at themselves after they saw this filtered, effect-driven version of themselves, it might make them actually feel worse about themselves because they're seeing sort of an ideal version of themselves, not just like a model or a celebrity, but an ideal version of themselves compared with their actual self.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.